Welcome in, everybody, to WEEI's Football Sunday Show. It's me, Megan Ottolini, joined by Chris Scheim. Christian Arcan has the weekend off.
Yeah, what is he doing taking time off of the football season?
I don't know.
I get accosted for that all the time.
I don't know. But happy Football Sunday to everybody. Happy Daylight Saving Time. Happy almost end of the election hell cycle.
Oh, thank God.
Happy Drake May is back day.
Yeah, that's
Chris
Scheim.
How excited were you when you got the news yesterday when the Patriots just put out that beautiful picture of your starting quarterback spinning the ball on two fingers saying Drake May is back, baby?
I did a happy dance. I'll be completely honest with you. That's 10.
What does that look like? Is it a twerk?
No, it's more of like a skip and a hop and a jump around in circles. It's.
Okay.
I try to be semi-athletic in my dancing skills.
Hop and a dance in a circle doesn't sound like peak athletic moves.
To be fair, though, like we've seen defensive linemen pop Achilles for less.
Okay. That's a risk you're not willing to take for Drake May.
Exactly. But at the same time, I was thrilled. I immediately went and wagered money on him. But I'm so excited. I was hoping that everything was going to trend in this direction. I felt like it was. I felt like he was moving through protocol pretty quickly. I didn't think any of this was very severe. So I was unbelievably excited yesterday when they announced that he was good to go.
I felt like it was too. And honestly, this is the first time in any recent years that I think we've been all very, very well versed on the NFL concussion protocol.
The five stages.
The five phases and what it means if he's practicing for more than 30 minutes or less than 30 minutes and if he's throwing the ball and all this stuff that was happening behind the scenes and that Jerod Mayo was attributing a lot to the league level. Mm-hmm. So I think he was trying to stay behind that curtain of saying it's really not our call, guys. Like when we were talking to him down at Gillette, he was basically saying like it's coming from the league. It's coming from the league. But I agree with you. All indications throughout the week, just in that there was no real big detours or seemingly setbacks in that protocol. Given what you saw with Brock Purdy having a similar head injury earlier in the season, you kind of were feeling hopeful throughout. We're probably going to get Drake May as the starter.
Yeah,
today.
And then you saw him practicing. I think that was Thursday, the first 30 minutes of practice. It's like, all right, like this seems like full system go. He just needs to kind of clear the last stay or phase or whatever, get cleared by an independent doctor, and we're good. And that's clearly exactly what happened. And I honestly think, like, if you had told me 6 or 7 years ago that this injury happened, it probably never would have been addressed or noticed or anything, right? Without those independent neurologists that are in spotters that the NFL has now, like, this is not the kind of concussion that would have been noticed and taken care of away.
So the only thing that I would say about that is that I do think that the concussion came from seemingly a helmet-to-helmet collision.
Yep.
Maybe would have raised some eyebrows even 6 years ago.
Sure, but
because of the helmet-to-helmet.
He didn't come out of the game right away either. Mm-hmm. And the very next play was an absolute dart that he threw to Kayshon Booty that Booty just dropped, and then they had to punt the ball away. And so in my head, like, clearly they didn't recognize it right after the hit because he bounced up and made a great play the next play. Like, so in my head, this is something that without the spotters may have gone under the radar. Maybe not. Maybe somebody did notice. But in my opinion, like, it probably would have just gone under the radar. Nobody would have noticed. It would have played the whole game because that's just kind of what the NFL was for years and years and years until recently. And so for me, you never got like that moment where you thought he was out cold or he was really kind of like face down on the ground. Like even the Davante Adams hit on Thursday night where he goes out of bounds and he is like down for a good like 10 count. It's like, oh, he might have a concussion, or the Josh Allen hit from weeks ago. And then with this, it was nothing like that. Like Drake got hit. There was clearly helmet-to-helmet contact, but pops right up, tries to make a play the next play. And so for me, I never felt like this was too serious that you were ever going to have to hold him out of the game.
Absolutely. All right, if you want to jump in on our conversation today, 617-779-7937 is the phone number that you want. We have a stacked show, as always. WEEI.com's Nick Fitzy-Stevens will join us at 10:45 to talk about the fan perspective of your New England Patriots team, who have the chance to get back-to-back wins for the first time since November of 2022. NBC
please.
Sports Boston's Tommy Curran joins us at 11, and we will have Wiggy's Keys to Victory, and we'll jump on with Andy Hart towards the end of the show. Again, we're taking you all the way up to kick off in Tennessee at 1 p.m. Now let's get to our Sunday storylines, our big takes going into this game. That's brought to you by Cars for Kids, the easiest way to get rid of your old car. Donate today and your car can be picked up tomorrow. Donate now at carsforkids.com. That's cars with a K. I'll start us off, Shime. My take away, or I guess my prediction, my want, my desire, what I have my eye on for this game is let Drake be Drake.
Yeah.
The one thing that concerns me that I've heard a little bit about the concussion that Drake suffered on Sunday and the way that the coaches have responded to questions about that is them saying Drake's really got to protect himself. When he's an open runner out on the field like that, he's got to know when to slide. He's got to be able to read what's coming at him. And the more I watch that collision, the more I think that was really just an unfortunate play by Jets Jamian Sherwood. And it seems like the league agrees because they just slapped a fine on him of over $6,000 for unnecessary roughness. And I don't want the lesson of this to be, hey, let's, you know, pull the reins back on Drake May's wild Mustang tendencies. Because I think overall, he's shown himself to be so professional and so, I guess, composed and calm in a way that I didn't expect him. I expected him to be much more like the young Josh Allen and be
erratic.
A little bit erratic, a little bit happy feet, a little bit, you know, nervous at times. And we really haven't seen that. And I think he does gain a lot of confidence from being able to step up in the pocket and being able to read the gaps that the defense presents in front of him and just charge through there like the big kid that he is in the backyard football style. And I want to continue seeing that aspect of his game, and I want to continue seeing the offense be able to play off of that. And my only concern coming off of this concussion truly is that Alex Van Pelt in particular, but also Jerron Mayo and the other coaches on that staff will look at the situation and go, he just doesn't know how to protect himself yet. Let's pull the reins back on that.
Yeah, so I actually took a little bit of something different away from Alex Van Pelt when he spoke, because I felt like he gave a really good answer about this. And he talked about, you know, Drake slid, but there's better ways to protect yourself, as in like diving head first. You can kind of control that head level contact, so you can try to avoid those hits that are seemingly, you know, kind of just unlucky. And that's kind of what this Jets hit was. It was a bit unlucky. He did slide. Maybe it was a little late, but it was a slide. He was trying to protect himself. It was unfortunate. But for the most part, like, this is a kid who gets out of bounds. He gets down. He avoids contact a lot of the time when he runs the football. And Alex Van Pelt talked about that. He's like, you know, he's just got to learn when to slide a bit more appropriately, how to slide better. You know, maybe diving head first will help. And then also, he talked about the design quarterback runs, which is something I've been clamoring now for weeks. And he's like, yeah, like,
yes.
I'm not going to do those
you
on a regular
and me
basis.
Both chime.
Yeah. And I thought his answer was at least acceptable, right? Where he said, you know, I'm not going to do those on a regular basis. But, you know, fourth and one in the goal line, maybe I might pull those out. And I think that's the right way to approach it. This is a guy that you don't, he's not Lamar Jackson. He's not going for 4,000 and 1,000.
Well, nobody is.
Yeah, true. Fair point.
Maybe Jaden Daniels 3 or 4 years from now.
Yeah, sure. but he can move and he can run. And so they don't want him running over linebackers like Josh Allen, which is smart. He's better in the pocket. But they do want to utilize his legs. And so I think they still have a vision for him of being able to use that athleticism, but just not be reckless with it.
And I don't think he's been reckless.
No, I agree.
That's the only thing. And maybe I'm thinking more about Jerron Mayo and the answer that he gave almost immediately after. And I think in a way it was Jerron Mayo trying to say, hey, this wasn't one of these instances that you guys love to pick out about the offensive line, because truly it wasn't. It was just Drake being a runner in the open field, and every quarterback opens themselves up to the risk of a hit like that. And that's just the risk that you take as with that style of play. So what is your big takeaway going into this game?
Yeah, so my big takeaway on top of Drake May is that you guys can have your first winning streak in such a long time.
Is two games a streak?
Yes.
Are you looking even further into the future?
No. Back to back is a streak.
That's a streak.
Yes, of course it's a streak.
That's not a streak. That's back to back.
Yeah, back to back is a streak.
That's not a streak.
If you combine one and another, you're streaking.
That's like saying two championships makes a dynasty. Two wins don't make a streak.
I beg to differ. But like at the same time, you can look at it and there's winnable games down the road here. So you could have a streak, right? This is a Titans team that is insanely beatable. They are so bad, and their numbers are a little skewed. And then when you look at it, even the week after. You get the Chicago Bears, who your Commanders just beat in an absolute slugfest because their offensive coordinator is a boob. Their head coach is kind of an idiot. And so the Bears are also beatable. And Drake May can kind of assert himself as the clear, at minimum, second-best rookie quarterback in this class over the next 2 weeks. And I think it's an opportunity for the New England Patriots to really kind of garner some confidence here and really kind of build themselves up a little bit. And I know a lot of people will complain, oh, I want a better draft pick. Who
cares?
We'll
get to that. We'll get to that. That's in the emotional roller coaster because I hate that conversation.
Establish a winning culture. Like, let's try and win some football games here, especially for Drake May. And this is as winnable a game as it gets this week against the Titans.
I think so, too. But I feel, you know, we're just not far removed from the Jacksonville game where I was kind of saying the same thing. Like, you're not going to be able to find these, I wouldn't even say scheduled wins, because where you are at in the league and your production so far, there are no scheduled wins. You're looking at, and you're looking at opportunities, and I'm hopeful about this game against Tennessee. I think that the line so far is weird. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that it didn't move more from 3.5 to 3 last I checked by Drake May being available.
Yep.
Perhaps it was set by people following Drake May's injury progress throughout the week.
They expected him to play anyway.
I still think that it's given a little bit too much to Tennessee.
I agree.
I agree with you that I would love to see this team get back-to-back wins, and that is meaningful for a locker room, especially a locker room with as many young pieces as they have right now, where it's DeMario Douglas, it's Christian Gonzalez, aside from Drake May, even somebody like Vidarian Lowe, who can be a serviceable offensive lineman going forward. You want these guys to be able to find something in each other who are going to be around, hopefully, 2 years from now.
Yeah.
Who knows what the locker room will look like
two years from now?
Start
building some of that chemistry.
I think it's going to have a huge amount of turnover, but when we talk about establishing culture, it sounds like this, like, soft kind of amorphous idea, like, oh, culture. I always think as an NBA person, like, oh, Heat culture. And you're like, that's not real. But it is real.
The Celtics have a culture. Like, good teams have culture.
And a lot of that comes through winning.
Yep.
But you don't just wake up one training camp and go, oh, you know what? The roster's talented, so we're going to start winning this year.
Yeah, like, look at the lines.
That's part of what the Jets have been struggling with this season.
There's zero culture
in that. It's really hard to just turn over an entire season unless you have a legend like Tom Brady walk into the building and says, like, hey, damn it, this is what the standard is, and if you're not with it, get out.
And to be fair, that Tampa Bay team had been together for quite a while, like, especially those receivers, that offense, the offensive line, and then you just insert the greatest quarterback of all time, and of course they start winning. But, you know, a team like the Lions had to build a culture under Dan Campbell. He has a clear kind of set of rules and way he goes about things. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are another great example under Mike Tomlin that have established a culture over time, and even a team like the Rams. And so that's what you have to start doing here, right? Even if you're in a losing season, you have to establish the foundation so that when your team and talent gets better, you have the ability within that locker room, within that building, to really push them to the next level and get them ready to win in those big moments.
So, Sean, because I haven't talked to you since last week.
Yes.
And there was the win that they
got. It's been 2 weeks now.
Is that true?
Yeah, I was out with strep throat last week.
Oh, yeah. How are you feeling?
Much better now.
Okay,
thankfully.
You sound totally healthy, so
cool.
I had already forgotten about it.
Appreciate it.
Okay, so
antibiotics are a wonderful thing.
You get the win with the combination of Drake May and Jacoby Brissett last week. Are you feeling any more confident after those two gross, gross performances with this team and then get a win that you needed so sorely last week?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is a long-winded way of asking, how are you feeling about Jerod Mayo and the rest of the coaching staff as we sit here today?
So I always felt like I needed to cut Jerod Mayo some slack because this is a guy who has never been a head coach or really like a coach with this much power at any level of football in his life, right? He went from being a player to working in business and then became a linebackers coach on this team and a defensive coordinator, like, overnight. And so he has never really been at this point ever. And so he really needed to learn a lot. And the learning curve was massive. And you've seen that play out, the way he says things and walks them back and the way he makes comments. But clearly, right, he says those soft comments and his guys respond. So to me, that indicates that he at least has some ability to gauge the temperature of the room and understand the personnel he's dealing with and how to speak to them and how to, you know, encourage them. And so I think that's a positive in his direction. He is learning about the, you know, speaking to the press thing. I think the Drake May injury is a great example of that. Like, yeah, you know, I'm just going to let the league handle it. And it gives you nothing else about it. It's just, yeah, the league, he has to go through protocol. If he gets through, great. If he doesn't, oh, well, we'd love to have him. That's the perfect way to answer that. And so I think he is learning. He's going to make more mistakes. I have no doubt about that. But my confidence in him is getting more by the day. With the rest of the coaching staff, maybe not so much. But with Gerard Mayo, I have faith that he can get better as time goes on.
I agree that last week's win was a huge vote of confidence in Gerard Mayo. But when I say huge, it's because confidence was very low going into it. And then we have the soft comments all week. It really seemed like a big litmus test to see how the team responded to that. And they responded very well. And I talked to guys in the locker room after the game. And they all felt pretty proud about how it was truly a team effort behind Jacoby Brissett. Not to take anything away from Jacoby Brissett, I think you feel like I do, where I would love to see him right off into the Patriots sunset.
Oh, I would too.
On that win. I would love that high note for him.
Yeah.
He kind of was putting up both, you know, flipping the bird at us in the media.
He has not been happy in the media lately.
And saying, like, I know you guys think it's easy to win. I know you guys didn't really think
spicy.
I had this in me. And that's fine. Like, okay, whatever it takes to motivate you. But I think it was a big litmus test as to, with these growing pains that Gerard Mayo is feeling right now, does he have a pulse in, like, with the locker room? Does he take the temperature of the locker room? Is he still connecting with those guys, or are they tuning him out? And I think you can look at the soft comments, the way that the team rallied behind Jacoby Brissett when they could have just said, well, screw it, Drake's out. Like, there's no way we're competing, and made a statement for their coach on Sunday.
And I also think the other thing too is the defense looked better, right? It wasn't great. It was by no shakes good, but they were better than what they had been. They didn't get run all over by Breece Hall and Braylon Allen. Aaron Rodgers wasn't entirely dicing them up and down like he was against the Texans on Thursday night in the second half. So I take those as positives. It may be because the Jets were just a dumpster fire at the time and you kind of got lucky, but from what I see and from the evidence I have, I'm like, okay, I see improvements there. I see improvements on the offensive line. I see improvements here. Like, it's like, okay, we're building towards something. Is it great? No. It's not going to be great this season.
Is it great?
It's probably not going to be great next year.
Nope, you can definitely depend on that.
But it's getting better than what it was. And that is a step in the right direction.
Okay, we're trying to find silver linings here. One of them might be back-to-back wins for the Patriots as they see the Titans in Tennessee at 1 p.m. Chris Scheim and I will be with you all the way up to kickoff at 1 p.m. After trending, when we come back, we're going to check in on the emotional roller coaster.
Woo!
See how everyone's feeling about rooting for a win or looking for the tank to be on. But first, trending. You hear that music? You know what it means? Time for the emotional roller coaster. This is when I put out a poll on Twitter to Patriots fans. If you ever want to jump in, it's usually like late Saturday night, early Sunday morning at Megan_Ottolini on Twitter. And today's poll, Patriots fans, is it better for New England to beat Tennessee or gain a stronger draft position? Your answer selections were just win, baby. Or path to the pick. A lot of votes rolled in on this, about 1,300 votes.
Love that.
We got 67% of fans want to win today. They want to see New England win. 33% said path to the pick. The tank is on. They're looking for you to maybe try to jump over Tennessee, because anybody who's not following the draft boards, first of all, bless you. Bless your heart. This is where you stand right now. Carolina, if the season ended today, has the number one pick in the 2025 draft, followed by Tennessee. You're at the number three spot. Then you got Jacksonville and New Orleans right behind you.
There's
obviously
so many bad teams.
There's a lot of really bad 1-6, 2-6 teams in that cluster there. So I understand why you might look at this position and this game and say, will be nice for you to keep yourself in that top three area and get yourself a pick by just losing to Tennessee today. What does a win total for this season even mean? I just think when you have the quarterback, and Scheim, I know you agree with me on this, through 2.3 games, I feel that New England has the quarterback in Drake May very early, but I'm inclined to feel that way. You don't need to be worried about if you're picking number one, number three, even number four, five, six.
Well, you can be up to 10, 15.
I think you're okay. I would like to see them win today.
I Mego, you and I are totally on the same page here.
That's so boring. Why don't you argue with me?
This isn't First Take. That's okay. Why. I deal with this with Wiggy every day of the week, and he is just dead set on having
you
the
highest
pick possible.
You guys talk about this
possible.
Every day?
Pretty close. He is dead set on having the highest pick possible. And to me, it doesn't matter. You have your quarterback. Micah Parsons was taken 10th or 11th overall. Devontae Smith was 11th overall. CeeDee Lamb was 15th. You can get guys like Joe Alt and all different kinds of offensive linemen from 5th to 12th. Like, there's just Garrett Wilson was taken right around 10th, I think. Drake London was 8th overall. Chris Olave was in the 13 range. Like, there are really good players generally in the NFL draft between 5 and 15. And so if you end up with 7 wins and end up with the 10th pick overall, who cares? Like, that's good for you. That means that Drake May knows how to win. Mm-hmm. That means your team improved over the duration of a season. And then heading into the next season, you have a ton of momentum. I look, and it may be difficult to kind of compare this team because they're just so good right now, but I look at the Detroit Lions from a couple years ago, right? The first year under Dan Campbell, 3-13, not good. Awful. Then the next year, they started slow and then went like 6-2 down the stretch at the end of the season to finish. I want to say it was 9-8 or 8-9. And they were like really, really good in the second half of the season. And then the next year they come out and they're awesome last year. They were so good. And now they're an absolute wagon in the NFC this year. And I think that's kind of the mold you want to have for the Patriots, right? Once you find the quarterback, once you find the right piece, you start to gain some momentum. It'll carry over into next season. Next season might not be perfect, but at least you're hunting for a playoff bid. You're kind of right there on that fringe. And then the following year, that third year of Drake May, is when you really start to push to be a legitimate contender in the AFC.
I agree. I have heard some people, and some people have responded. I wrote a column about this on Friday saying, well, wouldn't it be better to have a 1 or 2 pick and then you can trade that for a package of more draft capital and you can continue to build out this rebuild through that?
Sure.
And to me, that just, it's kind of like a marginal idea to me. Like, do you think that that's what's going to ultimately make or break the rebuild over the next 2 years?
No.
I don't really feel that way. And I feel that going through dysfunction and losing horribly week to week is the kind of thing that really sets back a rebuild. Like, I understand there. This is something that I think...
I mean, look at the Panthers.
Right. Two things that I want to make clear. There's a big difference between being a 1-win team, a 2-win team, and being a team that wins between 4 and 6 games. Like, it does. I know it doesn't seem that way because this fan base is so used to watching teams be in the playoffs and teams you just, you know, are easily in the conference championship. Like, that's what you're used to. But when you're a bad team, there is a difference between being outright completely dysfunctional and wondering when you're going to have to blow it up again.
Yeah.
And going, well, we have pieces here and we're working towards something. And the win column doesn't completely reflect that. But when you go into the games, they do.
Yeah, absolutely they do. And a lot of the times the teams picking at the top of the draft are there because they're awful franchises. Like, they're
right.
Constantly picking at the top of the draft.
Carolina.
I mean, Atlanta has picked in the top 10 for like 5 straight years. And the only reason they're any good this year is because they signed Kirk Cousins to a $180 million contract. They still can't rush the passer. Like, they traded for Matt Judon here. Good job by Elliott Wolf, by the way. 3rd-round pick for that. That was awesome because he has 1.5 sacks this year. He's terrible. Like, that defense can't get any pressure. And so I look at teams like that. I don't want to be the Atlanta Falcons. Did it work out for the Houston Texans where they were able to gather a ton of picks and make a lot of really impactful drafts? Yeah, it
yeah,
does.
But it's also very early. Like, if people hold up,
it is.
I understand holding up the Texans last year and saying, look what you can do with
look
the rookie
at them
quarterback.
This year. They're struggling a little bit now.
Yeah, absolutely. But sometimes we go so far with these comparisons where we make the Houston Texans sound like they're the Niners or something.
Yeah.
Like, they're not. They're a good team, and they have a lot of really solid talent. But we're not completely sure that what they did is the greatest path to a rebuild either.
It's a really a case-by-case basis, because then I also look at a team like the Rams, who for years, like 5 years running, didn't have a first-round pick because they were constantly trading it for a good player and a known commodity. Les Snead literally wore a T-shirt that said F them picks because he didn't care about the draft picks. It's such a crapshoot because they were the ones who, Les Snead was the one in particular, who was part of the Robert Griffin III trade. You know that trade well. He got all these picks, and out of all those picks he got for Robert Griffin III, he ended up with like Janoris Jenkins and like a couple years out of guys who were like out of the league 6 years later. And so he got nothing out of it. And ultimately, it's like, well, why do I have all these picks? It's just a crapshoot. It's better to maybe take one guy in the first round that you think might hit and then take shots in the guys on the fourth, fifth, sixth round. Because if you just take a million shots on those guys, you're bound to hit on a couple of them, like the Puka Nacuas of the world, the Kyron Williams, the Talanoa, the Hufangas in San Francisco. You know, guys, you can find guys all over the place. There's so many talented guys. It's just a matter of kind of making your way through the weeds. And that's the difficult part that the Patriots are going to have going forward. But I think there's really so many different ways to build a franchise now in the NFL that the whole tank thing is so outdated.
Here's the other side of it. And again, I wrote about this for WEI.com on Friday. You are odious right now. Like, nobody wants to hang out with you.
Yeah, compared to the Commanders, who people want to get traded to right now.
You stink. Let's not forget what happened in the offseason. Everybody flips out at Elliott Wolf, and maybe that's going to prove out to be the right response. But you went through who knows how many offensive coordinator candidates before you get Alex Van Pelt in here. You can't get Calvin Ridley to come here. Brandon Ayuk won't even entertain you. Right now, the best shot that you have with free agents and with bringing other coaching talent in here that is not connected to Green Bay or Cleveland is throwing the absolute bag at someone. And even then, you're used as leverage for other teams that guys actually want to go to. And so you have to show something towards the end of the season that makes it look like, once again, an attractive place that people will sign to.
100%.
This is so real to me, where if you continue down this path, the further you get away from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, people will look at your ownership group and they will look at your franchise and say, that was all the magic of Tom and Bill. And why am I going to go there now when those guys aren't there anymore? It's a totally different franchise.
Yeah, and it's people like this 617 texter. You need the first pick to get Hunter from Colorado, the receiver from Colorado. By the way, Travis Hunter, when he comes to the NFL, probably isn't going to play receiver. He's going to play corner, first of all. And secondly, the receiver class every year, there will never, ever, ever be a bad wide receiver class again in the NFL. Do you want to know why? Because all the kids across the nation play 7-on-7 from the time they're 5 years old until high school.
And you listen to Greg Olsen, that's ruining the young quarterbacks, by the way.
That's true. Fair point by Greg Olsen. I take that into account. But it also means that there's going to be wide receiver talent across the board everywhere from round 1 to round 6 every single year. I would rather somehow get 6 wins on the season for Drake May, make the team feel a little bit better, make the team a little bit of a more desirable location for other people, and take Mika Ekpuka out of Ohio State at like 14. Like, that to me is way better than Travis Hunter, who in my opinion is overrated anyways. I can't stand it. And so it's like,
I want them to take a tackle. So
yeah, I would love a tackle. The kid, Kelvin Banks out of Texas, is great. There's also a tackle out of LSU who looks really, really good. So yes, I'm into tackles. I like receivers. I like tackles. I like all those things. But just ultimately, like, it's like, you don't need a top 5 pick to get a really good player anymore. That's just not how it works. And, like, there's going to be a million running backs. There's so much talent in this class outside of the quarterback position. They're kind of set up in a really good spot.
So we're in the same spot on this. We think that when you have the quarterback, and maybe if you, for some reason that I could not understand, watch the Patriots on Sunday and don't like what you see from Drake May, you could talk me into it then. But yeah, I would disagree with your premise to begin with.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to agree with you, but I would at least understand your logic of saying you don't like Drake May or you don't believe in it, so you want them to go get another quarterback. I think you're crazy, but
you're
at least
nuts.
That makes more sense to me than the other side of the argument. We got a couple people hanging on the lines here. 617-779-7937 if you want to jump in on this conversation. Let's start with with Mike. He's been hanging on for a while. Mike in Rhode Island, you're on about the Patriots.
Hi. I think Drake May is going to have a great game today, and I think if our offensive line plays well, I think we're going to see a lot of touchdowns by the wide receivers. And shout out to my essays at Rhodey Football, Matunic Oyster Bar, Chop House, and Hank's Herbs.
Okay, thanks, like Mike. It. Matunic Oyster Bar, have you ever been there?
No, so I'm kind of bummed. Every year we do, the Greg Hill Show does a road show down in Rhode Island, and they've gone to Matunic Oyster Bar the last 2 years, and I have to stay here and press the buttons, so
that's,
I haven't gotten to
unfortunate.
Go. I heard it's awesome.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just unreal. Maybe best martini I've ever had.
Ooh, yeah, I know. I don't think it was this past year. It might have been 2 years ago. Courtney and Mike Milbury were going martini for martini at
what?
Matunic Oyster Bar. Oh, yeah. It's a party down there.
Martini for martini is a quick way to land either on your bathroom floor or in the hospital.
Yeah, not a great idea. But
props to them. They're better drinkers than I am. Let's go to Gino in Andover. Gino, you want to talk about the tank?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Morning.
I think we'll all agree that the Patriots need talent everywhere. So why not tank? Get a top pick. Now, we don't need a quarterback, but other teams do. And they'd be willing to trade up to get that quarterback. And we could trade down a little bit lesser of a pick in the first round and maybe grab a second rounder and then get your receiver there. So why not tank? I don't understand why win. I mean, look at, we had one win less last year. I think we might have instead of Drake May.
So, Gino, the way I would respond to that first is that I just, if this was a quarterback class like last year's, I might agree. I might be like, okay, it makes sense.
Okay, it's very rich saying that as we sit here now.
Well, yeah, but even if it...
I wanted the quarterback last year.
Yeah,
I agree
same.
With you on that, but I do think that the conversation in real time last year about this draft class of quarterbacks, first of all, it was really Caleb Williams and Drake May for mm-hmm. most of the season. Jaden Daniels obviously had
once
a Heisman year and surged through
nobody expected
November,
Bo
December.
Nix and Michael Penix to be first-round quarterbacks.
No.
J.J. McCarthy, another late riser.
There was
in that
a
class.
Lot of debate about, is this class just going to be 2021 again, or could it be like the Joe Burrow
well,
class?
Well, so when you are examining quarterback classes headed before the draft, like before even Christmas, right, that 2021 class stands out, the Joe Burrow class stands out, last year's class stands out to me. If you have classes like that that you know before Christmas, oh, it's going to be a good crop of quarterbacks, then yeah, having a top five pick is really nice because you probably can get a boatload of picks for a top five pick. However, this quarterback class is unlike any of those.
Which, God bless, like, thank God you got Drake May last year.
I couldn't agree more. This class to me is going to be more like that Kenny Pickett class than it is the last year's class. Like, I'm not even convinced that any of these guys are going to be legitimate first-round quarterbacks. Cam Ward out of Miami probably will be.
You are so lucky that Arcan is on the vineyard right now and not sitting in the room while you talk about Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah, good for
way.
Him. Being Deion Sanders' son doesn't make you a first-round pick. I'm sorry.
Actually, it might.
It will make him a first-round pick, but in my mind, like, evaluation-wise, not a first-round talent. Let's say that.
Okay.
And so, like, I look at this quarterback class. I'm unimpressed. I don't see anybody I love. Carson Beck is just so nah. He's, like, fine. Again, like, the best guy I can see kind of is Cam Ward. So I don't think having a top five pick will help you because I'm not convinced that there will be enough teams that are salivating enough to jump up in the draft to come get a quarterback that you would get the haul that you want.
Let's grab one more before we go to break, and then we'll talk to Nick Fitzy Stevens. This is Eric in Lemonster. Eric, you want to talk about tanking?
Yeah, it just blows my mind that people are actually for this. I don't think a lot of people can wrap their heads around the fact that these are professional athletes. From a little kid on up to now, they're built to win. That's all they want to do. These guys are not going to accept tanking. I don't understand why, as a fan base, you would want somebody to tank. Never mind asking these athletes and these coaches to do the same thing. It's just ridiculous in my mind.
Yeah, I think he has a point. Like, I don't think anybody on the team wants to tank. Like, that's not Maybe Elliot Wolf wants them to just be like tanking for a top pick, but at the same time, I think for his job security purposes, mm-hmm. he would rather them start winning games
as well. And here's the other thing is when you look at, first of all, tanking in the NFL is just so much less guaranteed than in the NBA.
The only time it was ever worth it was for Andrew Luck. That's it.
I'm sure we can go through history and find other cases when it has worked out to just straight tank. I think it's a hard thing to, like, a hard science to exact with a 53-man roster and the whole coaching staff and everything. It's also not something that you want to do unless you're looking at completely blowing up the program. And that's not what it seems that the Patriots are intent on doing.
No, you have your foundational
They're
piece
and quarterback.
They're trying
to build a foundation. You don't have an earthquake when you're trying to set the foundation.
Exactly. And so I also look at it too, and it's like, I always subscribe to the idea that if you're in week 15 and you're really close to the first overall pick and you want to tank those last couple weeks to make sure you get it, okay, that makes sense to me. I get that. Like, you're already there. You're not even technically halfway through the season.
We're just past Halloween, guys.
Yeah.
We're not even at the trade deadline.
And people are like, yeah, tank for the top five pick. Like, dude, you could rattle off five of the last nine. And it's like, oh, all of a sudden you're a 7-9 team. And who would have thought that at the beginning of the year? I'm not saying that that's going to happen or it's likely, but it's possible. Like, the crazier thing. I mean, I've seen the Kansas City Chiefs years ago with Alex Smith started 1-5 and then won 10 straight games. Like, teams just sometimes they turn things around.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
but I also think that there's a whole undercurrent to this of people think that tanking is a shortcut to immediately getting elite again.
Yeah. Ask the Carolina Panthers how that's working.
It just doesn't always work that way. I think it's hard to find a lot of examples where all of a sudden within, I don't know, 24 months, you're a significantly better team through a tank.
Yeah.
You can't avoid the rebuild. You tried to avoid the rebuild for several seasons when Bill Belichick was still here. You tried. You got to take your medicine. That's where they are.
Yeah, exactly. And there it's more of a restart and starting up that rebuild again. You're not blowing everything up. You're not knocking down the building. The building's already starting to be rebuilt. You can't then go and knock it down again and start all over. That's dumb. You're also wasting Drake May's rookie contract years, which right now in the NFL are the most important years for a franchise ever. Like, because you get the quarterback at such a cheap price where other quarterbacks are so expensive, you have the opportunity to spend money at other positions and really build up the talent on your roster.
And that's just economics from 100%. Professor Scheim right there.
You're damn
that's
right.
Your econ lesson. All right, when we come back, we're taking a quick break here. We'll talk to Nick Fitzy-Stevens about the state of the Patriots fan base. This report that came out from Diana Russini of The Athletic / New York Times yesterday about the Patriots being open for business. And what aspect of the game you want to see the Patriots really meaningfully improve on against Tennessee? Welcome back to WEI Football Sunday with Megan Adelini. Woo! And Chris Scheim. Christian Arcan has the day off. But the man who never takes a day off is waiting on the line. We got Nick Fitzy-Stevens joining us from the road. Fitzy, you're on the great highways of America?
That's right. I am on the sweet, sweet open road, just taking in some of this late autumn glory on my way back to the Fitzatorium to prepare for what I believe is going to be a raucous and thoroughly enjoyable Patriots Sunday. Get ready for another dub, Pats fans, because it's coming with a little extra hot sauce.
Okay, Fitzy, I feel like your car has some kind of like bass on it. Your voice sounds either you have a cold or you've got some kind of like voice changer in your car right now because your voice sounds very bassy. I want to get to this.
I took off my AirPods, so I think it'll probably sound better now. Okay.
There we go. Okay, you sound great.
There we go.
We talked briefly yesterday about this report from Diana Russini of The Athletic. Talking about the Patriots being open.
Briefly, you mean for 3 hours? Yeah, absolutely.
Being open for business at the trade deadline. Trade deadline is coming up on Tuesday, that big event that everyone is looking at on Tuesday. And they're talking about shopping Devon Godchow, John Jones, Kendrick Bourne, someone please take Tyquan Thornton. Any of those players, when you hear their names, do you think that they would be a big loss for the Patriots, not just in terms of on-field production, but in terms of building the culture of the team and the locker room?
Yeah, and it would start with Jonathan Jones because he's one of your last vestiges of
the Super Bowl double dynastic glory days. You know, you've only got a few guys left that have Lombardi and Brady Belichick DNA in their stream. So Jonathan Jones, to me, the way that he has stepped up this year with the virus that has taken down all of the people that have been named captains on the 2024 Patriots, being a vocal leader in the locker room, breaking the team down, stepping up to apologize for and or at least profess that there needs to be a higher level of accountability. And to me, the selflessness of somebody like Jonathan Jones, who I don't want to just see on the Patriots for the rest of this season, but I would love to see him go box to wire and cradle to grave as a Patriot. The guy plays inside primarily, and he's one of the best in the league. Cool, we don't have an outside cornerback. All right, fine, I'll play outside. Hey, it's 2 hours to kickoff. We just lost one of our safeties, who later on this week we would find out is actually on the shopping block. Hey, John, do you mind playing safety? Nope. It's people like that that lead by example, that show these kids how you need to have not only just availability, but positional versatility, and you have to be willing to do anything, not just for you and your brand, but for the team as well. So I think he'd probably be the most attractive commodity as well, with maybe Godshow and then Kendrick Bourne, and then there's a mile-long gap, and then you have the Flotsam and Jetsams of Osborne's and Thornton's et al. But I see Jonathan Jones being extremely valuable for a team that needs leadership, that needs a good corner, and somebody that they can depend on almost immediately, given his professionalism and high level of play.
Well, Fitzy, the biggest news of the week was that the Maniac cleared concussion protocol yesterday. I'm curious your thoughts on what you expect from him today against the Titans.
You know, Shyam, think of it this way. I would so dread it. Look, if you're going to put in Drake May, then you have to let Drake May cook. You have to let Drake May play the way that he plays best. You have to play him for all the reasons you drafted him. You can't say if he's gonna be cleared by the league and an independent neurologist, and you're gonna get him back there, full well knowing you had Jacoby Brissett as prepped as he's ever been, probably as confident as he's ever been, coming off that great comeback in the fourth quarter last week against the Jetropolitans. If you're gonna put him back there, then you got to let him do his thing. You know what I don't want to see Alex Van Pelt and Gerard Mayo do is. The way I was thinking of it was, you know those invisible dog fences that they get put up in
sure.
a lot of yards?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want basically the Patriots to almost say, you know, like there's a shot caller on you, Drake, and there's an invisible dog fence along the offensive line. No running. Don't go beyond that. If nothing's there, just, you know, take a knee, throw it away, or, you know, just do something smart, but protect yourself. Sure, I'd like to see him protect himself, but if, you know, running those up the guts, the outside moves, just, you know, get down quicker, maybe take five fewer yards, but don't start if you're going to let him play, and I was all for Brissett playing this week, full disclosure, but if you're going to let May play, then you have to let him play the way he plays, because I don't want him starting to develop I don't want fear to be a part of his game now, Shyam, because we love the fact that he's calm, composed, and on a moment's notice can absolutely just launch a howitzer from his right arm.
Fitzy, this is a really important question, so I want you to think about it and take it seriously. Mike Reese had a note in his football column today, his Sunday football column, about Drake May getting this nickname, particularly from his teammate Gonzo, that he is Draco. And Shyam noted during a break when we were talking about this, how do we feel about this nickname, that on Christian Gonzalez's very strange mic'd up, that was one of the only phrases that he said was Draco. How do we feel about Draco as the nickname for the future of the New England Patriots?
All right, I want you to grab that nickname of Drake Mays right now. I want you to step outside. I want you to put it in one of those cannons that they use to fire golf balls 400 yards at charity golf outings, except point that nickname into the sun or the ocean and never use it again.
What do you mean? It gives dragon vibes.
It's giving dragon.
No, I don't want anyone. I don't want anyone named after the douchiest character in the Harry Potter series. Draco?
It
Draco Malfoy? Get out of here.
It's a real cool name, though.
No, it's not. It sounds like a lame magician. Yeah, it does.
But I like that it sounds evil.
It's got faux menace to it. And that's, you know what? That sounds like a nickname Cam Newton would come up with on the spot if he was calling into the Greg Hill show to talk about Drake May. And if he didn't have a nickname for him yet, he'd be like, yeah, you know, Draco. He's something special.
Also, what's
I
up
hate
with
that?
What's up with like Patriots quarterbacks and gun-related nicknames? We had Mac-10, and now right. Draco is also like a gun-related name.
Is it really?
I believe so.
It is?
Yes.
I was today Sorry, years old when I learned
yeah.
that.
Yeah, producer Jacob giving me the thumbs up.
Okay, I don't know a lot about guns, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, take it from a young 20-something boy from the suburbs. Producer Jacob would definitely know.
He's shaking his head because he's from New York, so he doesn't appreciate that.
Oh, man. Oh, is that him flashing gang signs again? Oh,
God. Okay, Fitzy, I'm going to save you from yourself right now. We got to get a break. Thank you so much for joining us. Fitzy on the road, traveling through parts unknown. I guess right before we let you go, what's your prediction for the score of this game?
I think it's going to be a great environment from all accounts, from everyone that I've checked in with down in Nash Vegas. There are thousands and thousands of Patriots fans right now. The Nashville Patriots fan club has organized a 2,000-person tailgate that's taking place outside of Nissan Stadium. So the Pats couldn't look for better weather. It's 80 degrees down there right now. A homecoming from their fans and an opponent that is more banged up than Shime after a couple of hard seltzers following 18 holes of golf. So I think the Pats actually run this one today. This is a box-to-wire affair. I'm looking at 24-23-13, couple tutties for Drake, maybe one for Mondre, and a couple big field goals for new baby daddy, Joey Sly. 3-6 on the season, Mego. Let's go.
Okay, Nick Fitzy Stevens, thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Fitzy, be sure to check in with him at halftime and after the game when he's on with Andy Hart on the Six Rings podcast and post-game Patriots show. When we come back, we will talk to NBC Sports Boston Patriots insider Tom E. Curran talking about the goal for the Patriots at the trade deadline, what to expect from Drake May, and everything else as the Patriots see the Tennessee Titans at 1 p.m. today.